Hey, Change Nation, and welcome to the Voices of Social Change podcast. I'm your host, Josh, and I podcast this proudly, as always, from the Kansas City Startup Village. Coming at you today with a new intro. You'll notice I'm not going to bring the music back up today because I have a really exciting announcement to make, and I want to take just a few seconds with you. The first thing to know is that one thing we're doing here over the next few weeks is I'm going to play some of my best of episodes. The podcast is right at about a year old, so in celebration of our year anniversary, I want to go back to some of our earliest episodes. We had some of our best interviews back in those days, and we've had a lot of new listeners since then, so I wanted to replay a few of those interviews and share those stories with you because we have some really insightful guests, and if you haven't heard those, I want to make sure that you do. So that's the first bit, but the second reason that we're doing this is I have a really exciting announcement for you, and I don't want to reveal too much other than to tell you that the Voices of Social Change podcast, we're in kind of an adventure right now this summer in the process of reformatting it. It's not going anywhere. It's going to continue to be the podcast for aspiring social entrepreneurs around the world. We're going to continue to talk to rock star social entrepreneurs who have some of the best tools and best resources for us as we start to launch companies, businesses, ventures that make a dollar and a difference. So none of that will change, but the way that we do that is going to be different. We're going to take more of a storytelling approach and really get in depth with one social venture and learn about all the bits and pieces and the nuts and bolts that really made them what they are and help them become established social entrepreneurs. So that's some exciting stuff. Be on the lookout for that relaunching in the fall. In the meantime, though, like I said, we're not going anywhere. We're going to play some of our best of episodes over the next few weeks as my team and I get that podcast put together. My goal is to have an entire quarter, so 3 months worth of episodes for you ready to go before we even launch that thing, because I want to make sure that I can really piece together a great story for you that connects from beginning to middle to end. So we're all excited about that over here at Social Change Nation, but I wanted to let you know that. You'll hear me, if you're a regular listener, you're going to hear the same intro here for a couple weeks just to make sure everyone gets to know that as they're coming in, and we have new listeners coming in all the time. So I do try to make sure I keep everyone posted on what's going on, but that's what's happening. So for now, though, sit back, relax, and take a listen to one of these interviews from our early days in the best of Voices of Social Change. You won't regret it.
Hi, ladies and gents. Welcome to the Social Biz Showcase podcast, broadcasted proudly from the Kansas City Startup Village. I'm here today with Jen Shaw. Really excited for this interview. This is actually my first in-person interview. Most of my other interviews are on Skype. So I'm fortunate enough to have Jen here in my office as my first in-person guest. So really excited about that. Well, Jen Shaw, she and I just had a really great conversation this morning about a lot of different issues. So I'm really excited to chat through some of what we talked about here today and just kind of hear Jen's story and give her a chance to share a bit about it. Jen is coming to the Startup Village to kind of help us get our act together over here. throw things in line. Definitely helped me out a lot of insights for me today. But Jen, I'll let her tell more of her full story, but Jen Shaw is out of New York City and works with Bella Minds, which is an organization focused on tech education, specifically for women. Is that right,
specifically,
Jen?
For women.
Okay, sounds great. So, Jen, like I said, I just wanted to give everyone just kind of a quick nutshell version of who you are, but I want to let you take the mic now and just tell us a little bit about yourself personally, first of all, and then talk to us about Bella Minds and your organizations in New York City.
Sure. So, personally, I am based out of New York City, and I spend a lot of time in kind of quote-unquote what we call rural areas, specifically to take tech education to mid-career rural women so that we can enable them to kind of work, live, and learn and lead using the power of technology. So we want to make sure that they're using technology in both their personal and their professional lives for whatever that means. So kind of my history, why I care about that, is specifically because I come from a very rural area where there weren't a lot of opportunities or resources or even really a lot of talk or energy around, learning and tech and just kind of whatever that world would be. But then being in New York for so long, you kind of surround yourself and have built large organizations in New York with New York Tech Women, and you live in these two very different worlds. New York City has every possible resource, has companies flocking, people flocking, and then you see you go back home and you say, oh, look, what's happening here? And generally our first reaction is like, oh, this is exactly why I left. And I'm a firm believer that is exactly why we have to go back, at least in some capacity. So that's sort of my personal story with that. But Bella Minds really kind of came from a need of an outlet to grow out of, sort of outside of New York City. We were building up really great organizations and doing a lot of work for women, but we knew that we wanted to do more.
Gotcha. No, great, great. And we will definitely unpack the specific details of Bella Minds here in just a few, but wanted to get kind of a bird's eye view. And and I love, you know, for the audience that doesn't know, Jen and I, we really bonded over the whole small town background. Yeah. I haven't mentioned this before, but I'm from a small town too. And same thing, same kind of mentality. I loved growing up there. Love what I do now. I love cities now, but always have kind of a mind towards, you know, what can I do to bring what I've learned back? And that definitely influenced a lot of what I've done along the way too. Yeah. So yeah, I love that. Love that perspective. Yeah. Well, so Jen, we here at Change Nation, we're all about inspiration. So what I want you to do now is help us get the motivational, inspirational ball rolling by just a quote that you have, can be from someone else, but something that you have in your mind that really you think drives what you do.
Oh, a quote that comes to mind that drives what I do? I don't think I can say it on air.
how about a PC quote that drives what Bella Minds does?
What Bella Minds does.
Yeah,
someone once asked me, you know, what is leadership? And, you know, what defines a good leader? And my immediate, like, not even thoughtful process, but now I've given a lot of time and energy, was it was helping others. And it was, even if it's one person. And that's kind of our concept of Bella Minds, is that, you know, leadership is, as women in technology and city environments, it really is our responsibility to help others. So I think, you know, what is leadership, and is helping others. That's probably the one thing that drives me.
Yeah. No, I love that mindset. And the thing I love most about these interviews is hearing themes develop. And everyone I've interviewed will come back at some level to talk about helping others, serving others. And you really hit on something, too, that a lot of folks have hit on, is this idea of, if you've helped one person, you've changed the world. And that's what matters. And I love that perspective, because so many people get afraid, I think, to get involved because they don't feel like they can make a difference. But having that perspective, and it's a perspective I've heard from lots of folks,
yeah,
is really important.
Well, specifically when we talk about working with women, we use the word impact a lot. Specifically because while men are differences in genders, or we're excited about, you know, change or money or drive or power or growth or kind of things like that. But over and over again, if you generally talk to women, their conversation is, I want to make an impact. But when you remind them that you can make an impact on one person and you've made an impact, it goes a long way.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so we've talked about this, but I just want to dig in just a little bit more. I think I have an idea of what this is. But for you, what would you say is your central inspiration for your work? I know we've kind of heard a quote, but what inspires you to keep going every day despite the odds?
My best friend.
Okay.
My best friend. So sort of like the story behind Bella Minds is that I was living in this like very successful life in New York City. I would go home and I would see like my lifelong best friend, who is, you know, barely making, you know, $8 or $9 an hour, you know, working $60 or $70 or 60 or 70 hours a week in a kitchen, just really doing everything she can to provide for her family, and realize that technology can move the needle in ways that we never thought possible. Right? If we can make sure that she has skills that she can go from working $8.50 an hour to $10.50 or $18.50 an hour, and that technology then, because those are higher paying jobs and, you know, higher skilled jobs, if we can give and deliver that education, that how much that actually moves the needle for a family.
Yeah. Great.
That's why I keep going.
Yeah. Another theme right there. Everyone I've talked to so far, they always have a personal story, a personal connection that really drives them forward and keeps them moving. I mean, I know I have mine too. And it's just something that, you know, on those rough days when everything doesn't seem to be working out, that's what you remember and what keeps you driving.
You call and you say, like, why am I doing this? And she's pretty good at, like, because of me.
Yep. I love that. I love that. That source of inspiration is so important. So I love talking about that. So we'll go ahead and get a little more specific now in terms of the structure of Bella Minds, because we definitely want to chat about that. Can you talk first, Jen, and tell us what distinguishes Bella Minds as a social venture, you know, as opposed to something that might be a traditional entrepreneurial venture? What distinguishes that?
I mean, we consider the education probably is our biggest element of social change. We do believe that education changes the world. So I guess that's what I align to. When you're teaching others, no matter what the skill, you're changing the world. So that's kind of how I would define our parts of social.
Okay. And how do you measure that that social impact?
Right now, so we did launch in October. We did our first class in February. So I think ultimately our measure will be like the actual progression of all of our students as a whole. Mm-hmm. So we have a limited number now and we're kind of growing that base. But I think our measurement is that when we turn students into new leaders where they're then teaching someone else, I think that will be like the ultimate interaction.
Creating mentors. Yeah. No, yeah. I love that. And I think you have a really unique advantage. And we talked about this before. Tech education can move the needle for someone in terms of income. And a lot of these organizations that I work with, they do kind of struggle to measure that social impact. But I like how you have, you know, turning people into mentors is one way. But also, you could, I think, look at the difference in income along the road.
We could. We're pretty careful not to sort of pre-prescribe why they would want to come through one of our courses. Mm-hmm. So they could want to start a venture of their own, whether profit or nonprofit. They could just want to be able to keep up with their kids better. Maybe they just want to give back into their, you know, faith communities more. Maybe they just want to just know what other people know, and it's really just an inherent knowledge. So we're pretty open, right, in making sure that our student path sort of has like multiple ends, right? That they're coming in from varied backgrounds, homeschool moms, retired teachers, current teachers, you know, business executives, small business owners, you name it. And they'll come in with sort of all of these different backgrounds. But we actually don't pre-prescribe, go get a job in technology.
Okay.
But ultimately, it would be nice to be able to prove at least to some of our students who wanted that they did have a raise in income.
Got it.
So far, we're just still navigating kind of that end-to-end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I love that perspective, too, that a lot of times, and this was my perspective even until now, just what you mentioned, a lot of times we kind of want to put the measurement on it, but it may be different depending on each person, what they want to take out of it and what they want to accomplish, and we need to
be
able
to. Most of my students, like sort of the general quote, if you will, is that I came in thinking I would learn technology and I came out learning about myself.
I love that. I'd say if you can do that, you've accomplished a whole lot.
So we did a very good job at that.
Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff. Well, talk to me more then about this specific issue, tech education for women. We've heard a little bit about that, but talk to me about why you see that as a pressing social problem.
Yeah, so it actually is just even a little bit bigger than just women. While I have a background in kind of women's studies and working with single gender environments, I think it goes kind of hand in hand when we say mid-career and rural women. So that's like three very big elements, right? If you are mid-career, you're sort of an age, and we try not to pre-designate an age, but rather a stage in life. And if you're rural, that's a very special user group as well. Mm-hmm. And then if you're a woman, right? And so it's sort of like three very, very specific user groups. So working in women-only environments, we created a class because we know that single gender learning environments, both for young girls as well as for adult women, have deeper impact. They're more engaged in class, they're more willing to share, they're more willing to ask questions, they're more confident. And like at the end result, it's just a much, much higher success rate. So that is why we sort of focus on women. Ideally, what we're teaching is applied to anyone and everyone. And I would like to expand. Someday we are teaching the world. But you sort of have to start somewhere. And it's a space that I've spent a lot of energy in. So that's sort of why just women.
Okay.
Why the other parts are different.
Got it. Yeah. No, great stuff. And definitely it sounds like you had that background in tech. Again, kind of coming back to the personal connection. You've had that connection. You've had that connection to that world and seen the opportunities it created for you. I think this was a piece of it too.
Yeah.
Definitely.
My mom was a technologist of nature. Mm-hmm. And she taught me how to be a technologist at a very early age. And so, yeah, it was always just sort of something in my DNA that made me appreciate the power that technology and communication and growth and things like that gives you.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, you taught me a lot in just a couple hours about technology. Well, great. So talking more about the structure of mm-hmm. Bella Minds, some of the organizations that I interview have just a straightforward for-profit structure, some a nonprofit, and then there are a lot of hybrid organizations somewhere in the middle. So could you talk to us a little bit about your structure, how you chose it, and how successful you've seen that working for you so far?
Yeah. So I'm strictly for-profit, private for-profit education. Mm-hmm. We chose for-profit specifically to set an example. So one of the things that we see over and over again is women not sort of recognizing their value or worth. You know, 77 cents on the dollar, are they being paid? They're being funded in terms of their companies. It's, you know, a fraction of the rate that men are. And so we realize that it's probably both, you know, very, very real problems, but also kind of a mental block of women acknowledging that profit is okay, right? And we see this a lot that when we talk about a social venture, if you're a woman presenting, you know, something that I'm doing and it sounds like it has social or cause base to it, like, oh, that sounds like a nice project, or that sounds like a nice nonprofit, like, oh, is your nonprofit, et cetera. And the way that we actually speak to women about the things that they're working on. It was very, very important to me that we were a for-profit structure to set that example and remind women that there's no shame in doing good work and making money at the same time.
Got it. Sounds good. My screen just went away, so I'm going to have to get it back. There we go. Okay, now I'm set with the next question.
Okay.
Like I said, first live interview. Happened to work out a few the bugs. Yeah.
I like being first for things.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the interaction is definitely different. I mean, you know, technology is fantastic, but I don't know that it'll ever be able to just replace a genuine face-to-face.
Good segue, because actually we do live education specifically for that reason.
That's right. Yeah, I wanted to
talk about
that
transition.
Yeah. Tell me about this.
You know, so you know, there is something, right? That's a lot. Like, but there is a lot about, you know, what you get out of. We talk a lot about the five senses, right? Like, I can see you, I can hear you. If I wanted, you know, like, I can touch. We can high five. Probably can smell, right? Like when you talk about like senses, and you don't get that in a virtual learning situation.
Yeah.
And specifically, it's just a much deeper impact when you can learn in two directions. So you can learn from me, I can learn from you, right? Just like we can interact this way. We believe that learning has that impact. So Bella Minds was specifically built as an alternative to online learning. Like, we've talked a lot about education being online, being accessible to the masses, like really sort of being anywhere and everywhere. We have every Ivy League putting classes online. We have every person putting education on YouTube, you name it. But really, it just doesn't equate to the same level of interaction and completion that live learning models have. Without sort of taking into account for-credit college classes or for-work requirements, about 7% of all online classes are completed. 7% of online classes are completed. So no matter how many millions of people that we're educating, if you're not completing the class, you've not really sort of gotten your mission through. And so that was a big factor for us, is that we actually put people in a room to learn together.
That's same thing. Phenomenal. Yeah. And so how, we talked a little bit about this, but how do you, you know, you're reaching rural communities. Mm-hmm. How does that work logistically?
It's really hard. I'll be really honest. Probably why I'm sitting in Kansas City at this very moment.
Yeah.
So when we first started out, so talking about, like, you know, social, like the entrepreneurial part of this, right? When you very first start out, I started out with these grand plans that the beauty of New York is that no one's from there, right? We're all from Nebraska. We're all from Kansas. We're all from, like, Ann Arbor. We're all from, like, Nashville. We're all from, like, South Dakota somewhere, right? Like, because we really all had roots. And we sort of flocked to the city to, like, make change or do big things. And so my first grand plan was, I'm going to identify them in New York, and they're going to basically lead me or introduce me back home.
Mm-hmm.
Small pivot. Works. Works probably not like that. We actually are learning that through classes and just the programs that we've worked, is that the way that we will sort of get everywhere is that you have to actually have somebody on the ground. So it's one of our biggest challenges that we've had, is how do you identify sort of an up-and-coming leader who's probably not on the cutting edge in terms of communication and technology, like branding themselves, visibility, and how do you have them become a part of your organization to sort of be the leader teaching others? And so our philosophy was leaders creating leaders. There's a, you know, a woman ideally in rural America, rural South Dakota, rural Kansas, you know, wherever it is, and we give her the entire toolbox so that she on the ground, like in her home, can then deploy the classes.
Okay. Okay. So partnering with local yes. members of the community to give the classes. Yep. That's terrific. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we wanted to build up those leaders. Like we want there to be strong leaders in every community. Mm-hmm. And we just want to give her all of the tools that we have at our disposal so she can do that.
That's excellent. And another theme, too, just across the board with folks I've talked to, is building that local ownership. And whatever the yeah. cause is so critical.
Yeah.
I think it's critical for any kind of venture, but it's especially critical for a social venture.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You're building a community, and that's really important. So I love that aspect of it.
Yeah, and then what we can do ultimately is bring all of those community leaders together in a really fun, like, learning environment, specific for them, special for sort of those leaders, which then sort of really bursts all of the hubs and all of the bubbles that we see across the country and really creates one good long, you know, one wide net rather than just sort of have hubs all over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, great stuff. So yeah, we've talked a lot about the organization, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. But I want to bring it back to you just for a minute here.
Sure.
Folks involved in social change, one thing I've seen, we have a really hard time sometimes identifying ourselves. In other words, what we do. You know, are we entrepreneurs? Are we directors of a nonprofit? Which way do we go? So I want you to talk just a little bit. How do you define yourself?
Oh.
And did you have any trouble coming to that?
Oh yeah,
that identification. Talk to me about that struggle.
Oh, struggle, fun struggle. I was talked out of it, but it was. I remember actually the first time we were labeling me for New York Tech Women, and you know, what am I, and what does that own? Because it's loosely an organization now, kind of more a formal nonprofit, which has more things to it. But when we very first started, I was like, I'm a founder? Like, how did this happen? And so that was definitely hard. I do now sort of after a few years. It actually was a very long time. The first time I ordered business cards, my designer talked me out of it, but I had put on my title, it was like CEO, founder, and janitor. because, you know, this is what happens when you're an entrepreneur. Like, it's yeah. not, you know, and to have call myself CEO, like, that is just the most inflated thing possible. Like, how do we bring that down? Because I think one of the common things about, like, social-based people is, like, there is a sense of humbleness, right?
Yes.
Like, no matter what I do, I come from the Midwest, I'm going to probably be humble no matter how much I can brag about myself if I have to. But it's like, we're not putting CEO on, like, anything.
Yeah.
That is insane. That's ridiculous. So now I fully align with a founder, CEO, entrepreneur. Most days. Most days.
What about the days? The off days?
Yeah, the off days. I actually really align with just being a really good administrative assistant. I'm really well organized. Yep. I'm an assistant.
Gotcha.
I'll make a really good executive assistant someday.
Gotcha. Well, this is a new question that I've recently added, and I've really started to love it because I think we do. We struggle with that identity, and there's some really interesting stuff going on. For example, where Panda, the Panda sunglasses we talked
yeah.
about, they have one of their people is called the lead zookeeper or something. So there's
yeah.
really interesting stuff, I think, going on with titles. And that point you made about this idea of humility is a really interesting piece in our space. I think we see a lot, too.
Yeah.
So it's just a really
I'm not sure how I feel about the really, like, creative, like, names, you know, chief inspiration, chief happy officer, things like that. And I think that it's fun. I think it creates, like, a good sense of culture. I come from a very kind of structured and background, so there's a part of me that still really aligns to. But I don't know who the chief happiness officer reports to. I'm really confused. And so
yeah.
there's, no matter what, there's sort of a sense of, you know, so at Bella Mines we have pretty – you know, pretty traditional titles, like director of research, and we have director of operations, and it's, you know, it's pretty basic, director of community. Just because I don't think I know what to do with some of that, like, really fun energy. But I like people that use it.
No, great. Yeah, I love hearing the different perspectives on this, because there's some really interesting stuff happening right now.
Yeah.
So, and you make me think about my chief inspiration officer title. Maybe I need to shift that around. I love the, what was it, something something and janitor?
It was like founder, CEO, and janitor.
And janitor. I love that.
Because, like, that's what I am.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm definitely, when I think about, like, when, you know, in our office, it was, you know, it was definitely me that's like, let me have, like, dishes, and, like, I'm taking out the trash, and, you know, somebody has to take care of the small things.
Awesome. Great stuff.
Yeah.
So, coming back specifically to Bella Mines, or just generally in your entrepreneurial, socially entrepreneurial journey, let's talk about the accomplishment that you're most proud of along the way. What pops to your mind?
Oh, wow. The accomplishment that I'm probably most proud of is in our first class of Bella Mines, we actually brought people online at high speeds. So in our class, we actually had students that were not online, not participating in really in technology at really a very, very level at all. And so through our coursework and through our program, they actually prioritized that being connected mattered. And I think that was probably one of my more proud moments, is that if I hadn't have gone through everything else that I had done, my work is actually bringing people online. Yeah. You know, 15% of this country is actually offline completely, of adults.
Which is shocking.
One in seven American adults is offline. Yeah. One in seven.
Yeah.
Right? When you look around, you listen to this in a coffee shop, right? Like, you don't see that. But
it's out there.
It's out there.
Yeah.
So knowing that I actually, like, when you talk about metrics and moving the needle, that even if it was this, you know, just the smallest of bit, I moved it.
Awesome. Love that. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. So on the flip side of that, the entrepreneurial journey is full of ups and downs. So talk to us about a setback. We don't really believe in the word failure, but failure, if you will. A setback along the journey that just
lessons
really
learned.
Got you down, and how you
lessons
came back
learned.
From it. That's really what we want to
lessons
know, is what
learned.
It was, how you came back.
Lessons learned. Oh, God. How does anybody even come to just one of those? you know, I always ask for more money. Lesson learned. So we did a fundraising campaign. We did a crowdfunding campaign on a platform called Plum Alley. And we raised $28,692 from 273 people. Okay. Those were our numbers.
You know the number well.
I will take them to my grave. You know, and so I remember sort of like, oh, like, we can do this on like a few thousand. We can do this, like, you know, whatever it was. Lesson learned, like, always ask for more money. You know, no matter what kind of what you're doing, or always ask for more. Right? Maybe it's not money. Maybe it's, you know, time from somebody. Maybe it's more from the partnership. Maybe it's, you know, more from, you know, whatever friend, whatever you're asking for. I think I'm a big fan of just realizing and lesson learned, always ask for more, even if it seems uncomfortable.
And then do you have a specific story of how you then took that lesson and applied it to something else?
Oh, not really. Maybe there's a partnership in the works that eventually we'll be able to talk about that I think I asked for more.
Got it.
But I don't think we can talk about it yet.
Oh, that's no. Don't want to get into anything like that. But yeah, kept in the back of your mind.
I think there's definitely, it's always sort of there, is just, you know, the keep asking.
Okay.
Like, ask. Because I think specifically that doesn't come natural for women. I think it specifically doesn't come natural for adult women, specifically, you know, a rural in nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're very sort of self-sufficient, and I got this, and I don't, you know, I don't really need a lot of other people, and I don't need things. And I think that it specifically comes from, you know, an underrepresented and sort of this culture. And so I remind myself that it's the same reason why we do profit, is that, like, the example is it's okay to ask.
Yeah. And I love that piece of your story, the example you're setting and the personal attachment you have. by the way. And again, this that theme keeps coming up over and over again. There's this personal story and personal attachment for social entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is just so important because it just adds a completely different flavor.
It does.
To the types of things that we're up to.
Yeah. It's impressive when you hear, I mean, that we talk a lot about the word diversity. And in technology, I think that we use the term synonymously with gender right now.
Yeah.
But when I think about diversity, to me, it's those stories.
Yeah.
Right? It's everyone has a story. Everyone. And we should all be very excited to hear whoever's in front of us and hear their story.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And I totally agree. And that when you mentioned that, that really struck a chord with me because I told you I'd done AmeriCorps, and that was a big focus of our program. I worked with people who were Ivy League graduates and people who were pursuing their GED and everyone in between, and everyone had something really important to bring to the table. That was diversity.
That's
diversity of thought.
That's diversity.
You know, and then we could talk later about the different kinds of diversity that was there because there was a lot of that too. But first and foremost, just that diversity of thought, diversity of background was so huge and so important and added so much to what we did. Yeah, so I loved that perspective.
Yep.
Completely on the same page.
Big one.
So running a social business, what kind of unique advantages would you say you have?
Our story. Right. Right? I actually think that like it's really easy to sort of get somebody's attention and generally pretty easy to get the wow. Right. That's like the fun part. Like, that's what I love is that, you know, you tell somebody kind of what you're doing and they're like, oh, wow. Like, that's like a really big, hard thing. And I think that's our advantage versus, you know, and the reason why we do social entrepreneurship and why it's not just, you know, I created a company to do this or an app to do that or, you know, whatever it might be. And I think that's probably our biggest advantage.
Awesome. Love that. What would you say is the biggest challenge you face running a social business?
I think the perception of profit and business model. I think definitely is an issue. People want to, you know, assume that, oh, you know, I heard like the Bush Foundation is giving money out for that. Or, oh, I hear that, you know, so-and-so is doing, you know, XYZ, that there's money available for that kind of programming. And reminding them that those types of monies are probably not easily accessible for profit. And I think that the perception that, you know, we're either if we're going to earn it, which is not always as easily said, you know, done as it is said, or, oh, just go and get, there's a lot of like resources available for you. And I think that's probably one of the things that I consider a big challenge is nobody really knows where to put us, right? Like, it sounds nice and it's kind of this one familiar bucket. Oh, but you do something else and there's another bucket. So I think that's probably one of I talk a lot about, you know, business.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you've hit on one of the largest challenges that social entrepreneurs face part of why I asked that identity question is because we in society have a lot that we attach to for-profit and non-profit. Social business is kind of coming somewhere in the middle, but people don't always know, you know, how to latch that on, and we have just certain right or wrong, certain preconceptions about both of those, and that's a challenge.
It's a challenge for us. It's definitely a challenge. I mean, there's a million challenges. I'm a single founder. There's a million and one founders, but specifically, the thing that being a social entrepreneur does that sort of creates a challenge is that I say newness, because people just like don't know what to do with us.
How to define it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll help them find out sooner rather than later.
I agree.
We'll work on it.
I agree.
All right. So one quick sentence. What leads to a successful social venture?
In one quick sentence. I get a whole sentence. Not even a word.
Give it,
okay.
Yep, whole sentence.
This is going to take me some pondering. What leads to a successful social venture? I think a successful social venture means that you have done both impact, you've done lead, leading and then created other leading opportunities for people. And that it's a permanent change.
Mm-hmm.
Like that it is a permanent change. I think that you have to, we do a lot of work where we kind of like do one and done sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And that sustainability, that permanency, is big for me. I think that's what makes it successful, is that it doesn't just go away.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, you had some great nuggets right there in that one sentence, especially the idea of creating these leadership moments is huge. And that permanency is something that I know, at least in the nonprofit sector where I worked for quite a while, something we struggled with. We definitely struggled with.
Yeah.
And our attention was diverted in lots of different areas. And that was a tough thing. So I love that,
yeah,
that aspect.
Yeah. It's recently hit me. I was like, oh, like, I'll do a class, or I'm interested in a class. And I want that permanency. Like, I want something to grow and build. And I think it takes a long time to build and snowball into something that's really actually having longstanding impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. Well, Jen, that closes out the first section, and like I said, just some great nuggets there. I love the story piece, your story, first of all, but then just the general idea of weaving that story into what we do, mm-hmm. and having that personal connection being so important, and the many other nuggets of wisdom you've shared here in this interview and with me today this morning. I'll be chewing on it for quite a while. I told Jen today, in about 2 hours chatting with her, learned more than I have in the last 2-3 months. Really appreciative of that. Just lots of great lessons. No. Don't
apologize. Very good at issuing homework.
Yeah, I have my homework for the next few days at least. Yeah. And it'll blossom into a lot more, I'm sure,
yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
All great stuff. But no, so great first section. So we're moving into the last section here. This is my favorite part. I call it the blitz. It's where I'm going to just throw a lot of quick one-off questions at you and just want to get kind of your insights and some practical tools for Change Nation.
Okay.
Just link them up with some things that they can use, but just kind of get to know you a little bit better. But it'll take just a quick few minutes, and then I'll close out by just letting you share anything else you'd like and tell folks how they can reach you. So you ready to get started?
I'll try.
All right. Sounds good. So who's your hero, Jen?
My mom.
Perfect.
By far.
Perfect. Perfect. And you talked a little bit about why that is. What's the favorite tool you use right now to grow your organization?
Coffee.
I love that. It is a very, very critical tool. Very critical tool. Best piece of advice you've ever received?
Just do it. Word in there.
Yep.
Just do it.
Just do it. Perfect. Perfect. A fun escape you turn to when social business and the problems of the world get you down?
Wine with girlfriends. Like, there's undoubtedly wine involved.
Wine. Got it. So we got wine, we got coffee, and then just do it. Don't really need much more than that.
I'm a big fan of this, yeah.
All right, last question of the Blitz.
Okay.
First thing everyone can do right now to start changing the world?
Help someone. Call someone that has asked you for help and help them.
Yeah. Nothing more needs to be said. That's what I love about the Blitz. Nothing more needs to be said.
Yeah.
You force people into just quick answers and they get,
like that.
They get to the meat of it. Yeah, exactly. No, just help someone. We all have somebody in our life, and that's something I put up on my site that's really part of my mantra. Yep. There's always somebody.
Yeah.
And you talk to somebody who's had their life really significantly impacted, made it out of a situation that was tougher. They'll always, almost always, come back to, well, there was this one person that did this for me along the way. You know, I've had many of those along my journey too.
Yep.
So, yeah, absolutely. Great message. You can always be that person for somebody
always.
Else. Yeah. Love it. Well, like I said, lots of great nuggets here, Jen. Just appreciate you being so generous with your time. This will be really valuable. It's hugely valuable insight for me and definitely valuable for everyone listening. So appreciate being so generous with your time, coming out here to the Village to visit us. See the new Social Change Nation studio. Just opened up a couple weeks ago, sort of, if you can call it that, I guess.
No, it's good.
But no, thank you. We salute you. We appreciate everything that you do.
Thank you.
I just want to close out by letting you just tell folks how to reach you and anything else you'd like to share.
Yeah. So no, thank you. Like, this was really awesome. I always get a lot. It goes back to, that is my safe place, is just giving away knowledge. And so it was my pleasure to try to help and, like, lots of nuggets any way that I can. Again, Jen Shaw, you can find me probably the best way is on Twitter, at Miss Jen Shaw. That's kind of my safe space. I like things that are concise and 140 characters. You can find Bella Mines at Bella Mines or at bellamines.com. And for those of you in New York, don't forget that you can also find us with New York Tech Women. So it's at New York Tech Women or techwomen.co. It's the best places for us.
Awesome. Sounds good. And Change Nation, as usual, I will put links to everything Jen just mentioned in the show notes page. You can click on that real easily if you want to just click into that. Thanks again, Jen.
Thanks.
Appreciate your time.
No, of course. My pleasure.
Change Nation, we'll catch you on the flip side.